This is a despicable act of gun violence, a cowardly act.
Mass murder twice.
They say the guys came with ski masks and hoodies and just started shooting up the crowd.
Memorial Day gun violence takes a toll.
The George Bassett pulled a pistol on me.
It's sad to have to live in such a world.
Anti-Semitism on the rise in South Florida.
They yelled they were going to rape my wife and rape my daughter.
They're coming every day on, you know, every minute. We are just getting reports.
What's behind it? How to stop it?
Inaction is inexcusable.
We're not going to take it. We're not scared. We're not afraid.
By air, sea, and ocean drive, back to the beach. Memorial Day weekend marks 20 years.
Spring break was crazy.
Definitely not as crowded as what I saw from spring break.
Has it come a long way? And where is it headed?
Protecting free speech?
Massive companies in Silicon Valley are exerting a power over our population.
Or a political ploy? Florida's law targeting social media now facing a lawsuit.
It's all the big news of the week, all live this week in South Florida.
Good morning. Glad you could join us. I'm Michael Putnam.
I'm Glenna Milberg. On this Memorial Day weekend, our community is dealing with two mass shootings.
In Northwest Miami-Dade, the crime scene outside a club where at least 20 people were hit in a hail of gunfire, fatal for two of them. The shooters remain on the loose.
A little more than 24 hours before, shooters on a street in busy Wynwood interrupted the party atmosphere there with gunfire. Seven people hit and one has died.
Miami-Dade Police Director Alfredo Freddy Ramirez is with us live this morning to discuss this overnight mass shooting and the recent spike in gun violence.
A quick update first, though. Local 10 Syrah Onward is at the crime scene. Syrah, bring us up to speed.
So, Glenna, I can tell you this all happened around midnight. People were just leaving this local rapper's birthday party and a musical performance here. Right now, police say two people were shot and killed. At least 20 others were injured. And of those, two people are on life support.
This is a despicable act of gun violence.
A mass shooting at a Northwest Miami-Dade event hall overnight. More than 20 people shot, two killed outside the El Moolah venue. Police say the space was rented out for a concert and a birthday party for a local rapper. People were gathering outside when a white Nissan Pathfinder pulled up. Three people got out and started shooting into the crowd. Sky 10 showing as many as 100 evidence markers over bullet shell casings.
This is targeted. This is definitely not random.
The victims rushed to various hospitals, some by ambulance, some driving themselves. Jackson Memorial Hospital, one of several sites treating victims. A crowd gathering outside the trauma center waiting for updates.
So police are still looking for those shooters in that Nissan Pathfinder. They say they don't believe there's an active threat to the community. Right now, I'm waiting to get updates from the hospitals on those dozens of people being treated for those gunshot injuries. Of course, I'll keep you updated as we get that information. That's the latest live from Northwest Miami-Dade. Syrah Anwar, Local 10 News.
Syrah, thanks. A long night for Miami-Dade's police director. Freddie Ramirez is with us now live. Director, we value your time. So grateful you're able to be with us today.
Director, good morning. We know you haven't had much sleep, but here, bring us up to date. We just saw Syrah Anwar with sort of what she has been able to gather at the scene, but give us the latest. What can you tell us about this horrific incident?
It's a horrific act of gun violence that's plaguing our community. Right now, what we have is three victims that are critical right now, 17 others that are being treated at local hospitals. Our detectives are going from hospital to hospital right now, trying to get information from our victims as well as witnesses. Our crime scene is out there working. Our detectives are out in the street. We're making contact with community leaders that have called me specifically to give me information as well. And right now, it's all hands on deck. We're putting all the resources of this department out on the street to bring justice to these subjects.
Director, kind of a shock to the system, no doubt, to hear that there have been two mass shootings in the last, 36 hours or so. The one in Wynwood, not Miami-Dade's jurisdiction, the city of Miami, but certainly there are gun crimes we've been following
almost every day. Give some context, if you can, to what really feels like an uptick in this kind of gun violence.
No, it is horrible. The strange thing, if you look at our murder rate, is going down. The last 4 months, we've been going down. Up until today, we were down one in murders. We had 43 murders. So our officers and our community have been doing a great job to control this gun violence. But unfortunately, there's a small amount of people in our community that don't value life, that don't follow the rules, that don't care, and are only focused on enacting gun violence, killing people over ridiculous things, from vendettas, from drugs, to typical gang violence. And it's very frustrating. And what's frustrating is that the innocent people that are being hit as a result of these careless criminal acts by these individuals.
Yeah, Director Ramirez, we know you're right that the number of homicides in Miami-Dade and Broward, for that matter, has gone down over the last year or so. And yet the number of these drive-by shootings just seems to, at least anecdotally, just go on and on. As Glenna said, here we had one Friday night in Wynwood, and now here in Northwest Miami-Dade last night, another where a car pulls up, guys got out. They've got probably semi-automatic weapons, and they just unload. It's just, you know, it's so unacceptable. It just cannot go on.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And you see it in the community's response. You see in our rewards for the three-year-old, $67,000. Right now, we just received a $100,000 reward by Mr. Lemus. I mean, this community is outraged and engaged, just like we are, just like you are. And these are a strategic, specific act of violence. These are beefs that happen right away. No matter how much we put our personnel in every plug, every hole, we cannot stop that person that decides to get in a car, rack an AK-47, see someone who he wants down the street, and enact that violence within 30 seconds, and they're gone.
All right, let's talk about those rewards, because to your point, Director, this morning we're just learning about this cable television, Marcus Lemonis, business guru to a lot of people, offering up $100,000 reward. Let me just bring up Elijah LaFrance, a little boy who died after his birthday party in a hail of bullets. That reward up to $65,000. I'm sorry if I'm not totally up to date, an enormous number. But all of this money really is going nowhere, respectfully, because the information is not coming in. And please speak to, you know, we know, your detectives know, there are those who have information. What is it going to take, if not these hundreds of thousands of dollars, to get people to help?
Yes, unfortunately, we're battling a code of silence in these situations. And a lot of it has to do with fear. They live in fear of retaliation. A lot of it is also just, you know, the code on the street. But what's going to happen is, the more times that people don't say anything, it's going to be you, it's going to be someone you love that's going to get hit. And that's why they got to come forward. There's no way that this type of gun violence happens like it did and nobody saw nothing.
Yeah,
that's just not acceptable.
Yeah.
Not acceptable. And the police can't do it all. The men and women of this department are out there each and every day fighting crime. You see it on our social media, the amount of guns and dope that we're taking off the street, the community engagement, the programs that we've got going on, like the one we're going to be putting out right now with the mayor's office, which is enriching, investing in the communities, and also a public safety enforcement component at the same time. We're putting the medicine that needs to be done. However, there's that one component that's missing. The ones that saw something or know something, they need to say something so that this stops. Because if not, these people are running around the streets with no fear, and it's got to stop.
Yeah. Director, we know your officers are on it. You're working as hard as you can, and it's got to be terribly frustrating. Your detectives who are at the various hospitals this morning, where witnesses are, where people know something, are they learning anything? Are they getting any help at all?
Yes, they're getting information. They're all building blocks. The Circle Brotherhood called me. Leroy, I've had other unofficial leaders in the community that call me with different pieces that are building blocks to this case. But still, we need more information. We need more. With the three-year-old, you saw, although we haven't got the person who did it, but all the tips that we got led to all these arrests and busts that you're seeing, all these linear investigations to put these people out of business until we get the pressure strong enough so that we can get these people. We need that on this one as well. I mean, it's just, It's just very frustrating, but it's what you see around the country. You know, it was said last week that law enforcement is worried that this is going to be a violent summer. And you know what? Miami-Dade County is not immune to that. That's why we all have to band together, law enforcement, community, together, to put a stop to this. And ultimately, we got to protect our kids because they're the ones that are watching this. Thank God no kids were injured at this. And you know what else is another factor is our social media. When they put up these flyers that are incendiary in nature, what does that do? That attracts individuals to come to do retaliation or whatever. Whatever is being said on social media is being translated into a violent response. That's another angle that we have that we're also fighting with as well. It's not your traditional gun violence like from the 90s. This is different. There is a narcotic component, but there's a heavy social media, you know, these songs that they're saying, these things that are saying that are trigger words that are triggering a violent response. And if you don't have a good foundation at home and you're a person who's lost or don't care, well, this is what they're reacting with. Gun violence in the middle of the street and innocent people getting hit.
Director, you, in the minute we have left or so, you have a bully pulpit for the moment. There are a lot of people in high places that watch our program. What, as the leading officer of the largest police department in this state, what don't you have to help fight this scourge?
What I don't have is the information I need from those who saw what happened on the countless of these cases. That's what I don't have. That is the challenge. Our officers are out there. There's plenty of officers in the street. In fact, I got 100 a day in the beach. My officers are everywhere all over this community, as well as the other law enforcement agencies here in Miami-Dade County who are dealing with the same thing. This is, unfortunately, this is a societal issue. This is a cultural problem. This is a problem at home. This is something that transcends policing. That's why we have to use a different type of tactics, not only policing, but we need to get into these communities. We need to enrich these communities. We need to pick people up so that they don't fall down the line of these criminals, these murderers that are doing what they're doing right now. Yeah.
Director Alfredo Ramirez, we know that you and your department are hard at work on this. We wish you well, and we thank you for coming on this morning to give us the latest news. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Director.
Thank you so much.
While in South Florida, as we are talking about, there is a shooting almost every day. The police response things, those evidence marketers, those become such familiar sights. Every one, though, takes a human toll on families and this community.
Family members from this latest shooting incident right now are anxiously awaiting word on their loved ones. They are at the hospital, several hospitals in South Florida. And Local 10's Trent Kelly is at Jackson Memorial. Trent, what is the situation there? What are people saying?
Well, Michael, earlier this morning, it was a very emotional scene here outside JMH as we saw dozens upon dozens of very distraught and concerned family members arriving here near the hospital's front doors. They were here desperately seeking any sort of update they could get as to the condition of their loved ones. And one of the people who we found out here included a mother who was here to check on her 24-year-old son after she got a panicked phone call from him overnight telling her that he had been shot. Take a listen to how she described that moment.
That was the most horrible call for my son to be calling his father. They have a very close relationship. And to be telling us, Mom, Dad, I love you. I just want to say I love you. I was shot. It's burning. It hurts. It hurts. And for me to be a medical personnel, you know, you help others and you save them. But then when it's your own, you feel helpless. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, and Green went on to tell us that her son did undergo surgery after he sustained a gunshot wound to his stomach. Thankfully, though, she says his condition has now stabilized and he is now out of surgery. So a bit of good news there, but it comes as we now learn that another two of the shooting victims are now said to be on life support. That's in addition to the dozens of others who were also injured in that shooting and taken to various hospitals across both Broward and Miami-Dade counties, including most of those victims who were taken here, as we mentioned, to Jackson Memorial Hospital. Back out here at JMH, things are now starting to quiet down here, but we will remain in touch with those families and will bring you any updates that we receive as soon as we get them. For now, we are live outside Jackson Memorial Hospital in Miami. Michael, Glenna, back over to you.
Trent, thank you so much. And as you see, we have crews everywhere, so please do stay tuned to Local 10 News all day. So from an alarming rise in gun violence to an alarming rise in hate.
We are going to speak with one of the leaders that is keeping track in the alarming rise of anti-Semitism in South Florida. That's next.
This week, an alarming rise in hate and discrimination dominated headlines in South Florida, and a call to action by South Florida lawmakers on both sides of the aisle.
Long before the headlines of the last week or two, the Anti-Defamation League has been tracking the steady increase in anti-Semitic incidents, hate crimes, harassments of Jews. Yael Hirschfield is the interim regional director of the ADL of Florida. She joins us now by Zoom. Yael, good morning. Good to see you.
Thank you, Michael and Glenna, for having me.
Good morning, Yael. You know, we have covered what seems like a real spate of these kind of incidents in the last week. There is no doubt in the public consciousness it has really bubbled to the top. And there are many people telling us that they think it's connected to headlines coming out of the Middle East. What's your take with the ADL?
Absolutely. What we have seen in the last week is a spike of anti-Semitic incidents against Jewish individuals and institutions. And let's be clear about this. Targeting Jewish people for who they are, targeting Jewish institutions because they're Jewish in response to the Middle East conflict is not activism. It's plain and simple anti-Semitism. And at ADL, we have tracked in the last week or so an increase of 75% of anti-Semitic acts against the Jewish community. That's unheard of. And if you look at social media alone, we did a Twitter analysis over the last week. The trending of Hitler was right was 17,000 tweets.
So can we, let's just dig down a little bit into that. Horrifying to hear, but is that ignorance? Is that misinformation? In some cases, what we've covered, people doing things that almost feel like a mental illness.
Yeah.
What is, where does that come from?
I think it's a little bit of everything, but to be clear, you can have debate and policy disagreements with the conflict. You can go in rallies and protest and show your views. But when you use inflammatory rhetoric, when you call for actions against the Jewish people, when you demonize the state of Israel and those who support it, you create an environment where people that have hate in their hearts will use those words as a calling clarion to go out and attack Jewish people. So we need to be very careful on how we speak. We need to be very careful on what we say, because our words lead to action.
Yeah, you couldn't see it, but we were just showing some video of one of the ugliest anti-Semitic incidents that we've seen in the last couple of weeks in South Florida. A 39-year-old man from Hallandale Beach, stood outside the Chabad of South Broward, hurled insults. Here's a picture of this man. Hurled insults, anti-Semitic slurs, and then he left bags and boxes of human feces there outside. He has been charged with a hate crime, felony hate crime, in fact. Is this guy kind of typical of a anti-Semitic hater, or what would you say about these kinds of actions?
You know, like you mentioned, there are all kinds of people that will use the hate in their hearts to express it against the Jewish community. I mean, I don't want to focus on the one person that may have a mental health issue. It goes beyond that. The people that are marauding the streets in Los Angeles looking for Jewish people to attack, that is hate, plain and simple. It is anti-Semitic. So I want to be clear. What this individual did is hate crime, but it comes in many different forms, and we cannot excuse anti-Semitism because of the individual. The impact on the Jewish community is the same. The impact on Jewish people now debating whether they have to hide their Jewishness when going out is the same.
You know, that's interesting that you say that, Yael. We covered an incident at a pizza place in North Miami Beach this week, a kosher pizza place. The owner there had a message, and he was very adamant to get his message out. He said, this isn't 1941. We'll fight back. We are not afraid. I found that message really interesting to broadcast. And I would like for you to sort of fill in our viewers the context of that as you see it.
I think when we use those words, what we mean is that we will use the resources available to us. And that's why ADL established a website, hashtag Act Against Antisemitism and actagainstantisemitism.org. We have the elements and the tools to fight this back. You know, there are resolutions on both houses and Senate to condemn antisemitism. We are asking for funding to be placed addressing nonprofit security grants to preserve Jewish institutions. So we have the tools to fight back. That's what we mean, that we will not remain silent, that we will demand from our leaders the actions needed to protect the Jewish community. And that's what we mean.
Yeah. One way to fight back, we talk about this frequently at our dinner table, is to simply not abide any kind of anti-Semitic remark. If you hear something, somebody say something which, you know, has overtones of anti-Semitism, just don't sit there and let it go by. I mean, say something, I mean, perhaps in a civil way, if you can, but just simply standing by and not saying anything, not doing anything. I'm not advocating violence, but you just cannot permit people to tell ancient stories about Jews or make a slur and just and do nothing.
I absolutely agree with you, Michael, and Glenna, you're right. When we talk about fighting back, we talk about not being bystanders. We're asking also everyone in the community to support us. When they hear or see anti-Semitic tropes or stereotypes, whether it's on social media or on in their circles, push back and say that's not acceptable, because we know what that leads to. Words lead to action. And if we allow anti-Semitism, stereotypes, and bigotry to become normalized, we will see a society that deteriorates into acts of vandalism, into acts of assault, because when you don't recognize the humanity in the other, then you are easier prone to act violently against them.
Yael Hirschfield, interim director of the Anti-Defamation League of Florida, such wise words and sage advice, yes. And we appreciate you being with us today.
Yael, thank you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, this weekend marks 20 years of Memorial Day weekends on Miami Beach as we know it.
A look back for you and a look ahead with those driving the action is next.
South Beach is crowded this Memorial Day weekend with a throng of people relaxing, partying under the watchful eye of a big police presence.
Miami Beach first became an annual Memorial Day destination 20 years ago this weekend when a 250,000 people followed parties by some of the biggest names in hip-hop and took the city completely by surprise. And two people who were there from the beginning are here with us today. Michael Grieco is a state representative, though more significant for this discussion, a former Miami Beach commissioner who bucked a lot of blowback when he first proposed an Air and Sea show for this weekend. Josh Wallach is the chief operating officer of Mango's Tropical Cafe. His family has owned and operated that Ocean Drive party landmark for three decades. So great to see you both.
Michael, Josh, welcome. We're glad to see you.
Thank you so much.
Good to see you.
Great. Josh Wallach, let me begin by asking you, Mango's is a kind of a iconic spot there on Ocean Drive, and I would say I have been there on occasion and enjoyed a drink and a meal. It's quite a special place full of energy. Describe what has this weekend been like at Mango's?
Well, thank you very much, Michael, and great to see you, and happy Memorial Day to everybody out there. This weekend has been very sad, obviously, in the county with the shootings that we talked about earlier. But as far as Miami Beach goes, we're in, I believe, the fourth year of now the Hyundai Air and Sea Show. And this type of diverse, multidimensional programming has done wonders for Memorial Day weekend. for 15 years, we turned the city into basically a almost like a jail with just nothing going on, and people just shoved onto Ocean Drive with nothing to do. And that's kind of what played out over spring break. Now we have this incredible air and sea show. We have people from their rooftops watching our men and women in uniform fly by. So it's really changed. It's really become more diverse. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful weekend on Ocean Drive.
All right, so let's talk about the Air and Sea Show as we watch a little bit of it right now. Really popular event. Michael Grieco, and you were a commissioner. This was kind of your idea for the reasons, if we remember correctly, that it had gotten so out of hand. We were looking for alternative programming, and you took a lot of heat for that alternative programming, almost as a, my words, not anyone else's words, a whitewash of programming that you might have decided to offer for the diverse crowd that was already there.
So, you know, we're going back a few years now, and this really applies to all kind of high impact weekends in the city of Miami Beach, but Memorial Day in particular, we were looking at numbers somewhere between 700 and 1,000 arrests, depending on the year. And all of these impact weekends, the problem is that there was no program. You said alternate programming. There was no programming. And when you have no programming, the default is turns into a street party where people are drinking all day, all night, and that just leads to chaos. There was really no plan traffic-wise. There was no plan for the nightclubs, for the streets. So creating, you know, a family-friendly event that both catered to guests, but more importantly, catered to the residents. You know, you had people who would just flee the city when we would be, you know, kind of just filled 250,000 people at a time, and you don't feel safe in your own home just because it's just too many people. It's like a big nightclub. Miami Beach is only, you know, what, half a mile wide. It's only a few miles long. I mean, we have a topography issue. You can't squeeze that many people in. So we went from 1 year, we had 700 arrests. We put the Air and Sea Show in, and I think we had 70 arrests that first year that we had the Air and Sea Show in 2017. So it continues to grow, and it continues to be a successful event. I'm proud to say that this was my baby, and I think that the overwhelming response has been a positive one.
Yeah, well, I think indisputably the Air and Sea Show, particularly this weekend, has been so welcome. It's been a hit. The weather has been great, of course, and all of that has helped. Josh Wallach, do you think that as opposed to spring break, where we saw lots of bad behavior and unlawful acts and kind of rioting in the streets, do you think that maybe the answer to that is some kind of city-sponsored event where people just don't have to go out and, you know, drink and get crazy?
Michael, you just hit it on the head. I mean, look at all the Super Bowls and the BCS title games, Art Basel, the Air and Sea Show. This is exactly what Miami Beach has needed for years. Up until, I think, 2013, we had two people in the city administration, Graham Winnick and Max Sklar, that were in charge of programming Loomis Park, programming the city of Miami Beach for events like we have on peak weekends. And I will say something else, March, where we talk about that everybody is dreading now. My God, March is our season. That is the best month of the year. When the heck did we lose March? We should be dreading September, not March.
So I can sort of answer that, because alluding to the beginning of this segment, 20 years ago, when this hip-hop party nation descended on parties and organized, when I say organized by promoters, not by the city, and the city was taken off guard, that was kind of the inception mm-hmm. of this great big party weekend on Memorial Day. And you can't ignore the conversations that we've had right here on this program with this community's African-American community. And I want to bring up our friend Luther Campbell, who is a concert promoter who was there then, who has been kind of counseling and advising kind of programming to cater to the people who have come for these hip-hop parties. But he's been largely ignored by the city, and I don't say that as a pejorative, I say that just as a fact. So Michael Grieco, where has the appetite been for that to sort of say, hey, welcome, here's what we're going to do for you?
So the origination of Urban Beach Weekend was a very positive one. It was based on the fashion industry. It was based upon a lot of the historically black colleges. But over the years, it kind of turned into something where it was promoter-based. And it wasn't promoter-based where there was any sort of city sponsoring, where there was any sort of permitting. And it was just kind of chaos. And folks would drive in from multiple states. And it just became, the crowds just became too large. And it unfortunately attracted an element that was just coming into the city to essentially prey upon the folks who were coming here to have a good time and to do it responsibly. And, you know, so when we brought in the air show, you know, the air show is family friendly. You know, the military is, it welcomes all colors. It represents, you know, all walks of life. And it's been a hit across the board, white, black, young and old, resident, guests. You know, that was the one thing that, you know, you could try to paint it whatever you want to paint it, but at the end of the day, you know, the proof is in the pudding. There has been an exponential decrease in crime. It's made our law enforcement community made their jobs easier, and there has been an insertion of different kind of collateral events, but we're very happy with the result of it. And, you know, like Josh said, I think that we need to be looking at high impact weekends and figuring out other like events to make sure that our guests and our residents are adequately entertained and safely so.
All right, Mike Grieco, Josh Wallach, hold your places. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more about Memorial Day weekend on South Beach. Stay with us.
We are back with State Rep Michael Grieco, former Miami Beach Commissioner, and Josh Wallach, whose family owns Landmark Mango's Tropical Cafe on Ocean Drive, talking all things Memorial Day. Josh, the big news is the Beach Commission, Beach's mayor, are trying to redo the whole culture of the entertainment district. And the first concrete step they've taken was rolling back the last call for alcohol from 5 a.m. to 2 a.m. That 3 hours, a big, big business couple of hours at Mango's, no doubt. And you all filed suit. And so talk a little bit about why that might not be such a good idea for you and the whole plan to redo the entertainment district as more of a cultural destination rather as a party destination.
Well, actually, the Clevelander, our neighbor, filed suit with Alexander Tachmas and Kendall Coffey. We are just sort of going along for the ride. We're not involved in the suit itself. But as of right now, what we're looking at is, or what they're looking at is, an injunction hearing next Monday, because this whole thing, the 2 a.m. that everybody's talking about, is only 10 blocks on two streets. You can have a mega club, Glenna, at 9th and Washington right now. They just opened the Good Time Hotel. They have Story Nightclub on 2nd and Collins. All of these are out of the prohibition zone, okay? They have spot zoned, again, two streets, Collins and Ocean, for this prohibition. And what the injunction would be that because this is a land use matter, a spot zoning matter, the city needed 5 out of 7 commissioners, not 4-3. So we're looking to see if the court agrees, the Cleveland, and they're going to overturn this as an illegal law.
So you're talking about sort of a target issue rather than a conceptual issue. What do you think of the concept of making the entertainment district more of a cultural destination and less a raucous party destination?
Well, I think it's been a cultural destination with the Art Deco architecture. It's got incredible vistas. It's got incredible buildings, incredible park, the ocean. Everything's already there. Simply because you have a couple of places like Mango's and the Clevelander on Ocean Drive, those places have been there for 30 years and have been part of the renaissance of Miami Beach all these years. Will Smith, hottest club in the city, and it's right on the beach. Talking about Mango's, okay? The entire world dreams of seeing celebrities and Ferraris on Ocean Drive. Yeah, so
You know, Josh, there's no question. I mean, I've been in other parts of the world, and people will say, oh, Ocean Drive, you're from Miami. Yeah, we get it. But here's a question I'd like to ask. How much of your business occurs between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m.? I mean, is this really a hardship for you to not be serving drinks during those 3 hours?
Well, it's a tremendous hardship, Michael, because they just won't come. They'll go to venues on Washington Avenue, mere feet away from the prohibition zone, where they can spend their evening if they want to spend money. They'll go at 11 o'clock. They're not going to get kicked out like they do now at Mango's and the Clevelander and other venues on Ocean Drive. And then they can just walk over to Washington Avenue, walk over to the Airbnb parties, and walk over to a West Avenue where the party is moving to. What they're doing is wrong, because what they should be doing is, if they want to roll the city back to 2 a.m., they should be giving out late hour liquor licenses to venues like Live, like Mint Lounge, like Mango's, like the Clevelander, and those places that have security cameras, off-duty police officers, facilities that can handle late night hours, those places should stay open. And the places that are causing some of these issues, lose their as of right to do it. But Josh, places like Mango's.
Josh, you know, I'm sorry to cut you off. Josh Wallach, Michael Grieco, I do want you to know our time is cut short today by our breaking news, and we really do appreciate you being with us. And we'll have you back again, as this is an ongoing issue.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you so much.
This week, Governor Ron DeSantis signed off on a law taking aim at big tech. Days later, big tech sued.
A closer look at the law and the lawsuit against it when we come back. The new social media law that Governor Ron DeSantis signed this week cracks down on what the governor calls censorship by the big tech companies like Facebook and Twitter.
And days later, two associations repping those companies filed a federal lawsuit challenging that law as a violation of free speech. Carl Szabo is the vice president of NetChoice, one of the two industry groups that filed suit. He is with us right there live from Washington, D.C. Carl, it's great to see you.
Welcome. Thanks for having me. We're glad you're with us. Give us the theory, the legal theory in your lawsuit. Why is this Florida law unconstitutional?
You know, it's pretty clear once you stop and think about it. The First Amendment was designed to protect all of us, whether individual citizens, businesses, anyone, from government overreach and government-compelled speech. Essentially, the government can't come into your newsroom, into the Miami Herald, and tell them what to say, what to print, tell you what to say, what to print. Likewise, the same holds true for the online industry. The government cannot come in and tell us what to say and what to host. And that's exactly what you're seeing here, is a government-compelled speech issue, which runs directly counter not only to the text of the First Amendment, but the intent of the First Amendment. That's a pretty clear-cut suit.
Okay, so Carl, what's so interesting and quasi-ironic is that in covering this particular bill signing this week, Governor DeSantis almost had the very same argument as you had, that this is a free speech issue, right, and that the social media has become the public square, and that they feel that conservative viewpoints aren't getting the opportunity to have that kind of free speech because of what they consider overreach and the power of big tech companies. So does it go both ways?
Well, the thing is, the First Amendment was designed to prevent the federal government, state government, or even local government from coming in and telling us how to conduct our business and what type of content we have to host. So here's an example. If somebody were on the bus, which is much closer to a public square or public area than any private business, if I went on the bus in Miami and started screaming and wearing inappropriate clothing, the bus driver would ask me to leave. What you're seeing here when it comes to the online environment is, if people are violating the community guidelines, community standards of these private businesses, they're being asked to leave. And that's basically the right, and that's protected by our First Amendment.
And yet what we see so much on social media, and I just want to be really clear, I'm not advocating either way. I'm just challenging narrative. Okay. So what we see on social media, regardless of law, no law, lawsuit, no lawsuit, we see a lot of hate, a lot of venom, a lot of disinformation. And we see the social media companies attempting to crack down on things like that with standards that they put out there. Is it applied equally by those companies? And if not, doesn't that sort of give credence to government wanting to do something about it?
You know, when we oftentimes see actions taken to remove people we know, we only hear it from, well, people we know. And what we're not hearing is content being removed from people we don't know. Most all of the content being removed is being caught by bots and is being taken down before people ever see it. This is stuff like foreign government interference, pornography, child pornography, racist content. And all that is being caught and taken down because it violates community guidelines before it's even seen. Now, the question is it being applied fairly? Well, that's really hard to prove, because if you're only talking to people in one circle, you're only going to hear from people in one circle. But what I can tell you is, if any platform, whether online or offline, puts up promises and then violates those promises, we don't need a new law to take action. The state AG can take an action today for a deceptive trade practice. So what you're seeing here is something that not only is bad policy, because it would result in more offensive content, more pornography, more hate speech, more foreign interference, but at the same time, you're seeing something that violates the First Amendment. And whether it is a legal or policy issue, this is a bad approach.
Yeah, well, we know, and I'm not a lawyer, shouldn't be citing cases, but in 1974, the Supreme Court in the Tornillo decision, which was the Miami Herald, refused to allow a union teacher leader, Pat Tornillo, whom I knew very well, from publishing something he demanded that they publish. And the Supreme Court said, you cannot force a newspaper or any institution to violate their free speech, that they have their right to it. That sort of seems to be a principle at stake here, too.
Exactly. And we actually cite Tornillo in our complaint. And the thing that we need to recognize is, you know, when we talk about authoritarian entities and authoritarian countries, oftentimes what you see is a direct connection between the government and the media, where you see government and state-run media. One of the great ironies in this law is it would actually force online platforms to host foreign state-run media like Al Jazeera, like RN, like state-run media from North Korea or Russia. And it would have to be treated exactly the same as the Miami Herald. Now, a lot of platforms out there are trying to stop foreign influence, trying to stop misinformation. And this actually just makes it harder.
We have about a half a minute left. I just wanted to ask you something very practical. There, in this law, there is a carve out for theme parks that have platforms online. Is it Disney? So that carve out sort of violates the equal standard application right off the bat? I mean, wouldn't that kind of be a point set match in a lawsuit like yours?
I mean, it's points at match on the First Amendment alone, but that carve out, and I don't have to speculate its purpose, the sponsor of the amendment said it on the floor, it's to carve out Disney. But that just makes our lawsuit even stronger. So we expect a quick injunction of the law,
well, Carl,
and it will be struck down by the courts.
On that note, we are going to have to finish. Carl Szabo, thanks for joining
us.
Really appreciate it. And we'll be right back.
So much going on today, and we are on it. Reminder, we are online at Local 10 24/7, local10.com.
And remember, stay informed, get involved, and remember, honor our veterans.